It's always fun to recognize our graduates. And I know sometimes the graduates get a little animated, as Emma does, and I'm sorry, she takes after her mother. See? She's not even paying attention to the fact that I just used her and said something about it. She has no idea what I said. See? In their own little world, they exist in their own little bubble. Just kidding. No, it's been fun. Emma's reminded us over the last 2 weeks about every day that she's getting ready to graduate. Yeah, you say all. That's easy for you to say. All right, we're going to be in the book of Matthew today. So if I know you got up this morning and saw how beautiful the day was, and you may have just skirted right out of your house and forgot your Bible, that's okay. We have extras. So if you don't have a Bible or can't pull it up on your phone, if you'll just lift your hand, we would love to put a Bible in your hand so you can kind of read along with us with what we're going to be reading about. So just lift it up nice and high. I promise we won't embarrass you too bad. Awesome. Thank you so much. So the book of Matthew, hey, right up here. On my left, you're right, all the way up front. So the book of Matthew, and then we've got one right over here on the right too, on the other side. We'll see how fast you are today, Maria. See if that yoga's working. So one of the books that we're going to be in is, we reference it as one of the Gospels. Really, if you'll open your Bible up, it'll probably fall somewhere around Psalms or Proverbs, and head to the right, you will end up in the book of Matthew. And then there's some big numbers in there. Just look for the number 5, and then the little numbers are the verses. And so we're going to be in Matthew chapter 5, starting at verse 38 when we get there. Now, this passage that we're in of Matthew chapter 5, it's kind of coupled with Matthew chapter 6 and Matthew chapter 7. And we call it the Sermon on the Mount. So this was probably Jesus' sermon, his go-to thing, that wherever he went, this is probably what he taught. And as we have seen over the last few weeks, there's a lot in there. It is packed full of good stuff, not just Christian stuff, but good stuff that we should be following as people in general of how to live life. But Jesus attributes it to something that we've been looking at over the last few weeks, that all of this starts in our heart. The things that he's asking us to do and challenging us to do, these aren't things that we can just do on our own. We have to allow our heart to be transformed by him. And through that, then we have the power to live out this life and to do what he's calling us to do. Because what we're going to look at today can be really challenging for some of you. For some of you, you're going to look at the passage and think, yes, finally, he's speaking my language. Finally, I get to do what I've always wanted to do. But when he kind of uncovers what he's really referring to, it's going to be tough for us because it's going to go against our natural inclination for vengeance, because we're all naturally inclined to get back. I will amen myself because I know that's how I am. And so Jesus is going to address that today in the Sermon on the Mount. Now, we've been talking about some tough stuff. We've talked about murder begins in the heart. It's not actually the act that's the problem. It's where it starts in our heart that's the issue. We've talked about adultery, that it's not so much the act because it has to start somewhere, that it's really a reference of what's going on in our heart. Last week, we talked about oaths, and we talked about this very thought, that a pure heart replaces the need for an oath. If I am truly living up to what God has called me to be, there's really no reason for me to ever have to qualify any of my statements, because my life's going to prove that what I say is what I'm going to do or how I believe. Honestly, that's really what I mean. That'll catch a little later. Like, that's what we do. Listen, I was having a conversation with a good friend of mine this week that's what we do. And sometimes we say it to not qualify or to trick people into thinking that we're being honest only this time. Sometimes we say it just to emphasize the importance of what we're trying to say. But I think we throw it out there so much that we kind of lose the specialness of being truthful and honest. The reality is, I believe wholeheartedly that Jesus teaches us that there's no reason to take an oath. Now, marriage is different, serving the country is different, going to court, that's different. What he's talking about is your life alone should be enough to validate your words. And that's really how we should live, and that comes from a pure heart. Well, this week's sermon is no different. It's still going to pull back to, this is an attitude of our heart, it's a matter of the heart. And the thought that we're going to have today is this, that real love is always a choice. Real love is always a choice. Now, I know many of you are thinking, well, I watch you and Sally, and you guys just ooze love. She has to choose it every day. I hear her when she gets up. She goes in the bathroom before I get up, and she says, "I'm choosing to love Alan today." I'm just kidding. That's not true at all. Now, see, I just blew up last week's sermon because now you can't trust anything that I say. But seriously, oh, goodness. It's so difficult. But isn't that what we do? In the mornings, after a big fight or a blowout the night before or the day before or the week before, it is a choice. We get up and we say, you know what? Yes, this is difficult. Yes, Alan's a bonehead. But I'm going to choose to look past that, and we're going to work together to resolve the issue. It's a choice. I have to choose to love my children every day. Some days are easier than others. But there are days where I would rather just pinch their head off and throw them back in the swamp. Not you. Not you, Ethan. You're the best. But again, that's what... I caught it. But again, that's what we feel. We don't always feel in love. We don't always feel connected. We don't always feel in tune. But the reality is, if we want real love, it is an absolute choice to love. I'm not naturally inclined to love God. My sinful nature doesn't want to do what he's calling me to do or to be who he wants me to be. I must choose daily to deny myself in order to love him completely. Because in order to love him completely, I must obey what he's asked me to do. It's a choice. It's not about the ooey-gooey feelings that we get. That's nice. That's a bonus. But it's about the wholehearted choice in the heart of the matter when it's the most difficult to say, I'm choosing to love in this instance. So real love in everything that we do is always a choice. You don't have to. But my prayer, our prayer, is that you choose to. So let's jump in and see in Matthew chapter 5. We're going to start in verse 38. And this is a great verse to start with, because Jesus simply says, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Now, many of you maybe have been here over the last few weeks, and we've talked about adultery and murder and divorce and oaths and all these things, and you're like, finally, this is the language I can relate to. You do wrong to me, I'm going to get you right back. Yes, right? That's what he's saying. So stay with me. I know you know I'm going to get to some type of biblical, just let's be fleshly for a minute. This appeals to us. Do you know how I know? Because I've done it to my wife. I've done it to my children. I've done it to some of you. It's who we are. It's what we do. The coworkers that you work with, that's what you do. Your neighbors that let their dog visit your yard. As silly as that is, that's what we do. How can I get back? And Jesus says, you've heard it taught. All your life, Jewish people, you've heard the law. You know what has been said. And it says, the law says, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And I'm like, amen and amen. Let's stop there. Let's not read anything else. Let's just leave it there. But never does Jesus do that. He takes it where we want it to be and brings it back where it should be. So let's take a revisit back to the Old Testament, and let's look at, you don't have to turn there, I've got them on the screen, so you can kind of see what he's referencing. Because in the old law, here's what it said in Exodus: but if any harm follows, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Yes, please. When you hurt me, I'm going to make sure you are hurting back. That's what the law says. Isn't that great? I know some of y'all are like, you're weird. But seriously, get back in the flesh just for a minute. Set your Christianity inside. That speaks to us. That calls to us. I have a right that if you have hurt me, I can get you back. Based on the law. In Leviticus chapter 24, it says this: if a man causes disfigurement of his neighbor as he has done, so shall it be done to him. Fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, as he has caused disfigurement of a man, so shall it be to him. That's pretty pointed. It's starting to get a little uncomfortable, isn't it? Fracture for fracture? I don't know that I could do that. But boy, I can sure cut you in a heartbeat with my words. So Deuteronomy. Now this is where it starts to change a little bit in the language. So what we have to understand is what we see here at the very first part of this passage is actually also referring back to these other laws that we just read. And he says, and the judges shall make careful inquiry indeed. If the witness is a false witness who has testified falsely against his brother, then you shall do to him as he thought to have done to his brother. So you shall put away the evil from among you. In other words, if something happened to me and I make up a lie to make it worse or something different, and I go to the judges and they find out that that's what has happened, or if they find out that I'm lying, then whatever I accused my brother of, that's what they get to do to me in hopes that it will deter further junk. That's really how the legal system is supposed to work. Supposed to work. But we know that it really doesn't accomplish that anymore. But back in the day, that's what was supposed to happen. And he says, and those who remain shall hear and fear, and hereafter they shall not again commit such evil among you. Your eye shall not pity. Now, here's an interesting thought. So who are we talking to? We're not talking about regular people here. We're talking to the judges, the legal system, the one that are supposed to hear the arguments and the frustrations and the court cases that are going on, and they make a determination. And the law says, your eye shall not pity. In other words, don't get emotionally involved. Go by the letter of the law. An eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. And what Jesus is talking about here, when we go back to Matthew chapter 5, and he says, you've heard it taught before. Now, if you think back to the other passages that we've talked about the last few weeks, when he says that, we know what he's really getting at. You've been taught wrong. Or what you thought you were being taught, you made it into this other thing. And what I want to do is take what you thought you were being taught, and I want to bring it back to the right thing. So that's why we hear him say, you've heard it said before. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. What was happening was, the people of this day have gotten far away from all the judges. They were taking vengeance in their own hands. They were taking the law that was given to the judges to make these decisions, and they were executing it on their own. So in other words, if a friend of mine came to me and broke my leg, then my response was not to go to the courts and to the judges for them to make the determination. I just get you back. That was kind of what they were operating under. And Jesus says, whoa, you're missing it. That's not why the law was given, for you to exercise your own judgment and to take out vengeance. That's not what this is about. And so he begins his little explanation. In Matthew chapter 5, we're going to start reading in verse 39, and we're going to look at a few things that hopefully will open our eyes and challenge us a little bit. Might be pretty tough for some of us. But in Matthew chapter 5, verse 39, he says, but I tell you, not to resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. Now that verse right there can be problematic for some of us. Because we've always been taught, hey, listen, if somebody slaps you on the cheek, just turn the other cheek and just move on. Which I wholeheartedly agree. But we take that and we try to blow it up to some other thing that's really not being talked about here. If you'll notice, we always leave out the very first part of that statement. He says, do not resist an evil person. In other words, if Sally comes at me, not that she's an evil person, do not read into that statement. If she comes at me in her flesh and is just biting on me, just, Jesus says, don't push back. If your neighbor who is not a believer, is always at you, he says, just don't push back. Just let him chew on you a little bit. What's it going to hurt? He says, if your coworker or your boss are mistreating you or just being evil towards you, just do your job and let it go. That doesn't sound like an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth to me. But you know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like to me Jesus is saying, you know what's more important? The relationship. He says, do not let vengeance take over because you will lose the relationship. We're not here to cast judgment and make people pay for their wrongdoings. We are here to love and to let our opportunity for vengeance go and allow God to do what only God can do. That's a hard thing for us, because then we can go off into a whole nother tangent, a whole nother message, and say, well, what if somebody's breaking into my house and they're going to cause harm to my family? That's not what Jesus is talking about here. Obviously, I believe Jesus would say, defend your family. It's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about people who just mistreat you, where we want to get our feathers ruffled and get all upset and get them back. Jesus says, no, turn your other cheek, let it go. Take it on the chin and keep moving. That doesn't sound very fun to me. Doesn't sound very enjoyable to me. Doesn't sound very loving. So, Pastor Allen, are you telling me you should just let people walk all over me? No, that's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is you don't need to get back. Hold your ground. Be kind, be courteous, love on them. Scripture tells us that when we do that, it's like heaping hot coals on their head. It just steams them up because they're not getting to you. Yeah, it's going to hurt. That's why you have a wife or a husband at home to come home and pour on them. Let me tell you what happened today. Just get it all out. By the way, if your spouse does that, they're not wanting you to fix it. They just want you to listen. Free marriage advice. Been married 21 years, took me 20 to learn that. So Jesus is simply saying, listen, there's something far more important here. We're going to protect the physical, but really what I want you to protect is the relational. We have to be more about the relationship than anything else. Obviously, the physical part is a whole nother sermon for a whole nother day. But when we talk about the relationship, that is the thing we need to strive to protect more than anything else. Now, you're probably thinking, with my neighbor who lets their dog visit my yard? Yeah. It's just a little poop. I mean, you laugh about that, but that infuriates me. But what's the big deal? What if, in just a minute, we're going to talk about going the extra mile. What if I go pick it up and say, hey, your dog visited my yard today. I took care of it for you. Why can't we do that? Why is it so hard for us just to let things go because we're not getting fair treatment? Really? Nothing in this life is fair. Nothing in this life will ever be fair. The fact that Christ gave his life for us, that's not fair, but we get the benefit of it. We're okay with that. Stop living a life of fair and unfair. It's not about that. It's about the relationship and loving people where they're at. When we look at verse 40, he says, if anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. So when we see tunic and cloak, we're talking about the garments that they used to wear. They used to wear some outer garments, multiple layers. And the tunic was kind of like the outside. It was like this big rectangle, this big square that just kind of went over their head and fell down. And then the cloak on the inside was more of a, like a onesie, for lack of a better term. And so what they're talking about is if they're going to sue you and they're coming after a certain thing, instead of taking it to the court and letting the court decide, you can remedy this entire process. You can fix it by simply giving them what they're asking for and a little more. That goes against our grain. We don't like that. Because they're going to get the better of me. They're going to get something over on me. Well, what if you, by loving them and working with them, you win them over to Christ because of the relationship that you're trying to fix and protect? Now, does that mean we never sue people or anything? Stop reading into stuff. Take it for what it's worth here. He's saying if somebody's coming after you and you can fix it before you go any further, then fix it. what are you really losing anyway? If we are living in the spiritual realm and thinking about Christ and how we're supposed to live in that idea rather than living in the world, it's going to be a lot easier for us. But when we live in the world and try to be like the world, it's not going to be that easy. We're going to get frustrated. We're going to take it to the nth degree. But loving Christ first in order to love the people around us and giving them what they've asked for. Now, again, there's always wisdom and discernment in all of this. But Jesus is pretty clear. If they are coming after something specific, okay, if it's within your power to do it, do it. Give it to them. Here's the second thing. The law of love does what is necessary to avoid contention. So for me, we can talk about all the laws and we can blow them up and adjust them to make it fit our thing. But I think Jesus, what he does is he says, okay, great. All those laws are fine. They're working, but you guys have manipulated them. Here's really what I want you to focus on. I want you to focus on the law of love. Just love people. He says, if we can focus on the law of love, it will help us to avoid contention. Now listen, I don't like contention. I don't like drama. I really don't like drama. And if there are things that you're holding on to that you're going to bring here, just know there's a staff here, a team here, that we're going to walk beside you and help you get rid of that drama. We don't want to hear. Because contention breeds strife. Strife brings anger. Anger brings bitterness, and bitterness will blow a church up. I'm just not interested. And so we're lovingly going to help you work through these things. If there are things that you're holding against us here at the church, come talk to us so we can make the relationship better, so we can move forward together. That's what this is about. The law of love is the way that we avoid all contention. It's putting the other's needs in front of our own. It's being willing to submit to our spouse, even when we may disagree or not like it, but for the safety of the contention, especially if it's something dumb and unspiritual, let it go. Let it go. I've watched churches split for silly, simple, idiotic reasons because they weren't willing to use the law of love and work together. They weren't willing just to come together and try to find common ground and work for the common goal of pushing people to Christ. I'm not interested in that. And it's easy for us to look at the church and say, absolutely, yeah, we're not going to do that. But how many marriages get in that spot? How many marriages aren't willing to wiggle and to submit to one another because of strength or weakness or whatever you want to call it? The reality is we are called to love one another by putting the other's needs in front of our own. And when we can do that, I'm telling you, contention and strife and grief will be almost non-existent. Those aren't my words. That's what Jesus is telling us. Avoid contention. If they ask for it, give it to them the best that you can. And give them more. Which seriously blows our brains. Just blows our mind. Verse 41. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Now if we're running, I'm not doing that. Naomi can do that. I'm not doing that. Just kidding. This one is hard for us too. Because notice that it says compel you. This isn't like, hey, if you want to go, let's go. It's, you have to do this. It's kind of like children. Like, they have responsibilities in the home, or they should have responsibilities in the home. And so there's an expectation. And using that as an example, what Jesus is saying, do what's expected of you, but look around to see what else you can do. Can I use a personal example? Not tooting my own horn or Charlie's own horn or anything like that, but you guys hired us to preach, teach, counsel, study, answer phone calls, go visit sick, right? Can I tell you something that we do all that, but we like to go the extra mile. And you know what we like to do? We like to dig ditches. We like to mow the grass. We like to go the extra mile of things that, yeah, anybody could do it, but we want to do it. Do you know why we do that? Because we want to serve God with the abilities and the qualities that he's given us. We go the extra mile. Listen, at your workplace, you already have this list of things you're supposed to do. Why would it be so wrong for you to complete those and then do a little more? Do you know what that's doing? That's not only promoting a relationship between your bosses and your coworkers. It could work against you, but hopefully not if you do it with the right spirit. But it's allowing people to see that there's something different working within you. That it's the Spirit of God driving you and propelling you and encouraging you to live differently. Go the extra mile. Now, when Jesus was talking about this, it used to be that the messengers would be stationed at certain lengths down from one town to another. And instead of making that one messenger go the entire length, they would send one to the next and then to the next and to the next until it reached the city. And Jesus is saying, listen, let's say, for instance, that's the example we're using. If you're the one carrying it to the next man, just go with him for the next mile. Bring some company to him. Hang out with him. You don't have to. But what does that say to the next guy that's carrying the message? For me, it's the relationship. It's the law of love. The law of love requires us more, or requires more than what is asked of us. My responsibility is to love Sally with everything, to protect her, to provide for her, but I want to go that extra mile. Not only do I want to do that, but I want to meet her needs before she even has to ask. I want to provide for my kids in such a way that they never have to wonder about my love for them. I want to tell them regularly. I don't want to just tell them. I want them to feel it and experience it. My job is to teach them and to train them and to love them, but I want them to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that their dad is in their corner. I want to go that extra mile and do whatever is necessary to make sure that they know that. I want to serve you in such a way that I don't want to just sit in my office and only show up on Sundays because that's what you asked me to do. I want to be in the thick of things with you. I want to get dirty with you. I want to do life with you because I believe that's what God has called all of us to do, to go that extra mile. Now, it's easy to use church as a reference, but what about your job? I get that you may not like your boss or your coworkers, but listen, you're not working for them if you are a follower of Christ. You are working for God. And if that's the case, then go the extra mile. Let Him be the judge and the rewarder of your actions. Forget what they're going to say and what they're going to do. You do what you're responsible for. And that neighbor that you probably do not like, win them over by going the extra mile. Do what is necessary to win them over. And then lastly, the last verse of verse 42, he says, give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Now this one gets really tricky and really hairy really quick. Sitting in my office on Thursday, we were talking about this, and all four of us sit in different positions on this verse. Because we all have different life experience, different feelings, different thoughts about what this looks like and how this plays out. Jesus says, and I believe he is referring to believers to begin with. He says, listen, if someone is in need amongst you, family, friends, whatever, and you have the ability to help them, do it. If they ask to borrow something, don't withhold it for them. Now again, wisdom and discernment is required here. But I've told you lots of times, I got a garage full of tools. Come get it. Just let me know that you got it. It's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But now you're probably thinking, okay, well, Pastor Aaron, what if it's some random stranger? Because we never have that happen coming to our church asking for stuff. Never. Again, we fall on different spots on this, and it's a tough place. But Jesus says, if they're asking, give it. Albert Barnes does a great job of qualifying that. He says this. This is the general rule. It is better to give sometimes to an undeserving person than to turn away one really in need. It is good to be in the habit of giving. Albert Barnes believes that Jesus was referring to this idea of, listen, it's better that you give and err on the side of they're just going to take advantage of you than to err and not give and miss a perfect opportunity. Now again, we're smart people. We should use our wisdom and discernment to read through situations, use our life experience. But I believe when it comes to church folks, should be almost automatic. When it comes from random strangers, I think Paul addresses that. He says if they're coming to ask in 2 Thessalonians for food, feed them. But if they ask for anything more, give them a job. I'm good with that. Give them something to do. And if they don't want to do it, then you know. If they're willing to work, then be willing to bless them. Pretty decent rule. But do you see how that can be tough for us? And we use the outside people all the time. But let's bring it home. I go home and I just want to sit and be quiet because I've talked all day. I've problem solved all day. I've studied all day. Like, my brain is shot. I don't want to talk about anything. I don't want to solve any problems. I just want to be left alone. But I have four individuals at my home that want my attention. Four individuals who are asking, Dad, will you just spend some time with me? Will you talk with me? Will you play with me? Will you eat with us? Whatever. And if I can't give them what they're asking for, then what kind of believer am I? Some of us have put ourselves in a spot where we are required to work too much and we're missing out on so much. I get we have to have jobs. I get that we have to have the bills paid and have nice things. I get that. But if it comes at the expense of missing out on children or your wife or your husband, what is it really worth? We have a responsibility to give when asked upon, but to use wisdom and judgment in all of that. And I believe our first and foremost responsibility is to our family before anybody else. And so maybe today we have to do a reevaluation of what I'm giving my time to, because saying yes to something means I'm probably saying no to something else. And what you're saying no to may need you more than the thing that you're saying yes to. So here's a couple of things that we can think about based on this passage. I think the first thing, and this is probably one of the harder things for us, but we can leave the law in the hands of the court. We can let the court do its job. Now, it's very easy for us to make the argument, I can make the argument myself, that the court system probably isn't going to do a very good job of that. I get that. And so here's where I go with that, because I try not to operate in this world. I try to operate in a little bit different fashion of thinking spiritually most of the time. And so here's where I go when I think about this, because I do want to see people properly punished for the crimes that they have done, because I believe wholeheartedly that's what should happen, but it doesn't happen all the time. However, in Romans 12:19, Paul says, "Beloved, do not avenge yourselves." That's pretty plain. He says, don't take the law into your own hands. Don't feel like you have to bring the justice. He says, but rather give place to wrath. Put it in its right place. Be angry. It's okay, but put it in its right spot. He says, for it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. So yes, our court systems aren't the greatest. And if you're a judge or a lawyer, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to rail on you. But let's be honest and real. It doesn't work. Jesus says, for you believers, for you followers of Christ, I realize that the world is going to mistreat you and take things away from you, and things are just going to be bad and happen, and you really can't rely on the court system. I get that. But just don't forget that when you are resting in the presence of God in heaven, I will take the final vengeance out on those that deserve it. Let that sink in. Because one of the things that I always talked about when I used to drive a school bus, the kids would try to, if something happened to a kid, they try to get back at them. And I would look at them and say, let me ask you a question. Who's going to be able to do more harm or damage to this person? You or me taking them to the school and reporting them? Who's going to get more trouble out of it? And the answer was always, well, you, Mr. Bus Driver, you're going to be able to do better. I look at it as, who's going to be able to do more damage to the person that you're trying to avenge? You or God? That's the mentality we have to get to. And that's so hard for us because we want to do the eye for the eye and the tooth for the tooth. And Jesus says, no, you're missing it. It's not about that. It's about the law of love. Let me take care of that for you because I will do just fine. I don't need your help. In fact, what I'm going to do is going to be a lot worse than what you could ever dream or think. Leave the law in the hands of the courts. The relationship matters most. For me, in this passage, this is the biggest thing that I got out of all of it, was that it's not even about the eye for the eye or getting back or lending or anything like that. It's about protecting the relationship that's at hand. It's about seeing the opportunity to expose this person to the love of Jesus by how I interact with them, by how I lend, by how I treat, by how I just try to fix the contention. That, to me, is the biggest thing that comes out of all of this, is that the relationship matters most. And again, it's easy for us to think about, well, yeah, outside of here, that's really easy. I can just let things go because I probably will never see that person to just cut me off. I'm just going to let it go. It's not a big deal. They slap me on the cheek by cutting me off. I'm just going to turn the other cheek and let them go on their way. I'm not going to do what I would normally do, whatever that might be. Right? That's easy for us. Yeah, I can do that. Well, what about your neighbor? Again, I know I keep bringing this up, but the reality is your neighbor is not just the person who lives beside you, but the people that you interact with, the people that may need to see Jesus through you, the ones that God brings into contact with you to make an impact on them for Him. That's your neighbor. And for us, that's what matters most. It's your one shot at exposing them to Jesus. But then we get a little bit closer to home. We get our coworkers, the ones that we really don't want to see tomorrow. And Jesus says, no. You got to let all that contention go. You got to let all this bad feelings and harmful feelings and all the things that they've ever done to you, let that go. I'll take care of that when the time is right. What I need from you is to love them. I need you to work that relationship in such a way, you don't have to be best buddies with them and go hang out with them, but treat them in such a way that causes them to see me in you. And then here's one that we really never think about, but our family. This should be the first thing we think about. Listen, how I treat Sally and how she treats me is not so you guys think that we just have an amazing marriage. It's not so the people out in public think, oh, look at that sweet little cute couple. Or at least they say that about her. Like, what it really is for, I want my boys to know how to treat a woman. And I want my boys to know how to be loved properly by a woman. That's what this is about. And what you show your children is how you value relationships. I know, that stings a little. That's okay. But it's the truth. The relationship should be the very most important thing. And one that I did not put up there, but the one that should be closest to home to all of us is our relationship with Jesus. That is the one thing that we should protect most and do the most work to make sure that that is always intact in order to be relational here. Thirdly, the law of love trumps all other laws. The law of love trumps all other laws. Trumps them all. Takes care. Doesn't matter that Jesus or that God said, hey, don't murder. If I love you effectively and correctly, then I won't murder you. Think about it. All of those Ten Commandments deal with our relationship with God and our relationship with people. How we love God and how we love people. By the way, Jesus took all of those laws and boiled it down to two. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. The law of love trumps everything else. That's hard for us. And when I think about the law of love trumping everything else, I think about Jesus, who had it all and came down here to live with us, suffered for 3 years of trying to work with people and then suffered a gruesome, awful death, and then laid his life on a cross for us. You talk about the law of love, of putting others' needs in front of our own, of going the second mile when he really was only required to go the one. That's what Jesus did for us. That's the relationship we've got to protect more than anything else, because Jesus modeled it best for us. John 13, 34 through 35, I'm almost done. He says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. You've heard me preach this verse a lot, but I'm going to keep preaching it because it's still something we all struggle with. He says, as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, by what? By how we love one another. All will know that you are my disciples if you have love one for another. Jesus said, listen, if you want this to work, if you want to have an impact on people to bring them to me, you've got to learn how to love one another. That even means the people you don't like. You've got to figure out a way to have some type of interaction with them so that they will know that you love me. Good luck with that. That's hard. That means I'm constantly having to replay these things in my mind. I'm constantly having to check myself to make sure that how I'm speaking, how I'm responding, how I am treating you is in love because of what Christ has done for me. In Romans, we find some great verses. Here's what it says. Owe no one anything. Actually, I said Romans. Sorry. It felt wrong this morning. Oh, good. Romans. In Romans. Just want to make sure. I had 1 Corinthians 13 on my brain. It says this, owe no one anything except what? Paul, of all people who mistreated the followers of Christ in the beginning, has turned his heart around and has experienced something great in God. And through Christ, he says, listen, don't owe anybody anything except just to love them. For he who loves another has what? What has he done? Say that loud. What? You mean all the laws? All of them? Yes. He says, if you will just love one another, you fulfilled the law. You've done what you were set out to do. You've done exactly what God expected of us. He says, for the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. And if there's any other commandment, he says, bring one up. Throw it out there. Put it in this little mix. If there's any other, are all summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. You can't tell me that Jesus wasn't serious about loving one another, about how we treat each other, how we do this life. Paul says, you take any commandment that you want, any of them, and you can boil it down to this very thought that we should love our neighbor as ourselves. Watch what it says. Love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. Listen, if I love my wife effectively and correctly, I break zero laws. If I love my children the way that I'm commanded to love my children, I break no laws. If I love my church and you all that are here the way that God has commanded me to love you, I break no laws. And what I do is I fulfill the law of love that God has set in front of us. So yeah, we can look at all of those passages and say, oh, okay, well, here's how I deal with this and here's how I deal with this. But the reality is it boils down to you've got to choose to love correctly. Real love is always a choice. Now, I know many of you are thinking, well, man, you don't know my workplace. You're right, I don't. And you get to work at a church with Charlie and Tim and Jan. You don't know how hard that is. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. It is fantastic. And so, yes, to some degree, I don't know what you go through and experience, but I remember working in the public. And I remember when I was a kid and a young adult, how annoying that was. I can't even imagine how much worse it is nowadays. But you will never convince me that that changes anything that Jesus said, that if you want people to know that you follow me, love them. Okay, thank you. I was hoping that was getting there. Doesn't change truth. Circumstances are different. Yeah, I agree with that. But it does not change that real love is always a choice. Let me pray for you this morning as the praise team comes. God, I appreciate all that you do. Thank you for your love. Thanks for just the challenge of trying to figure all this out. God, it is difficult for us because we want that vengeance. We want to get back. We don't want to get got by anybody. However, we see very clearly in your word this morning that we can resist the evil person by just simply turning our other cheek and letting it go. It's not worth it. That when contention arises, we can do a lot to suppress that and make it go away by being generous and giving to what is being asked to. God, there is plenty about giving to others, and we have to be wise with that. But God, you say, listen, it's better to err one way than the other. But God, help us to look closely at our relationship with you to make sure that we are running this race correctly. Lord, help us to take a closer look at our marriages and our parenting and our friendships and our church relationships. So God, make sure that we are loving each other the way that you've called us to love, because we want people to see Jesus through us. But God, more importantly than being here in this place, we represent you out in this world, and we may be the only Jesus that people get to see or experience. Help us to love effectively. Help us to choose love every opportunity that we can. Forgive us when we don't, but empower us to make that choice to promote you and you alone. As we get ready to sing, I pray that your spirit would move, that you would allow people the freedom to pray where they're at, come to the altar, do whatever they need to do, but to get a hold of you and have a conversation with you. We love you, we praise you, and thank you in Jesus' name.